Parashas Matos, if you go through the parasha carefully, there's some very, very complicated halachas. So Hilchos Neda, the halachas of a war that took place of Midian, and therefore the halachas that come afterwards with regard to Hagolas Kelim, Tevilas Kelim. Then there's a lengthy calculation exactly how much they got and how much they earned and how much they gave and how much they split off. But what I'd like to focus on this year is the story of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. So in Perek Lamed Beis begins a story about Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. Umikne Rav hoyu levnei Reuven evnei Gad otzum ma'id. They had a huge amount of wealth. Vayiras eretz ya'azeh ve'eretz gilad v'hineh ha'mokim mokim mikne. And they saw that the land was fitting for their needs, and therefore, by Avoy Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven, they came. By Yomer Moshe, they came to speak to Moshe. By Lozar Koyin, by Nesiu Ha'Edelemo. Obviously, Aaron Koyin was ready to pass away in previous parasha, and therefore, they came to speak to Moshe and the Lozar, and they said to him, "Ha'eretz Hashikah Hashem Bnei Ados Yisrael Eretz Miknehil Avdecha Mikneh." There's a need, and there's a demand, and there's a supply, and therefore, our animals need food. There's a pasture land for our animals. Please, let us use this pasture land rather than going into Eretz Yisrael. We don't want to cross the Yarden. We're quite happy to be where we are. And Moshe really gets upset with them. One second. We all fought for this together. And we've reached this stage together. Now you want to just sit here, plonk down your stuff, build up your house, and everyone else should go to war without you. Who do you think you are? But why are you doing this, taking away the courage of Klal Yisrael? And he gave them a long Musad Rasha. Anyway, and he mamish a Musad Rasha posuk after posuk after posuk after posuk. And then, Vayigshe Elov, and he said to him, one second, it's nothing to do with this. We are happy to go along. No. Right now, what we'll do is we'll build pens for our sheep. And cities for our children, and we'll go out and fight for them. And not only will we fight for them until they actually are settled, finish the war, we'll wait until they're settled, just in case there's any surprise along the way. We'll go along and we will fight and settle them in Eretz Yisrael. 14 years we'll be away from our families and everything will be fine. That's what we're talking about. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, if you do that and you go across and you do fight, then the parasha go through a Tanai Kofel and Tanai Kodin Lamaisa and a Hen Kodin Lalav, all the conditions of Tanai, what we know Tanai God Bnei Reuven. Now there's all the conditions of Bnei God Bnei Reuven is learned from this parasha. Okay? The Lachos of Tanai. The Shaila is, first of all, why go into this length? Why does the parasha go into this length, go on and on? Mamashi, you should know how many psukim this is. This is Perik Lamed Beis Pasuk Aleph. It goes all the way Lamaisa until the end of the Perik, end of the parasha, 42 psukim. Talking about Bnei God Bnei Reuven. So why go into such detail about Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven? And in fact, the halachas of Hilchos Tanoim are learnt from Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven as if Moshe Rabbeinu never trusted them. You know, if you're in business, you'll notice that a contract is basically, you know, if there are two liars, two cheats on either side, a contract's not going to help you that much anyway. Okay? If they're both honest, then you need a contract. So the contract is just there, just to, you know, these certain situations were just to take away the Yetzer Hara of two people cheating each other. But when you write a contract up, pages after page, of little thing, and him and her, and this and that, and why and when and how, then you obviously, there's a lot of mistrust over here. Moshe Rabbeinu is some reason mistrusting Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven. He doesn't trust him. And in fact, he says it very clearly. He says in the Pasuk, he says, in Pasuk Chof Dalet, he says, "Benu lechem orim tat letatchem. Build cities for your children, ugederes etzoynachem, and pens for your sheep. Va'ayotzi mipichem tasev. Just make sure you're sticking to your word." You're talking to Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven. What is this? What's this mistrust? Where's this coming from? So really, you know, you have to understand, why is it so lengthy? Why is this mistrust? But more than anything, what always bothered me many, many years is the fact that we see on a regular basis now, so at this time of the year, you see the Nefesh B'Nefesh planes flying over into Ramat Bet Shemesh. I don't know why they bother flying to Ben Gurion. So I don't understand why they bother flying to Ben Gurion. They should just come straight up Nachal Ayalon. And his family is a Meis Nefesh. The Meis Nefesh to do Aliyah, the Meis Nefesh to put to Eretz Yisrael. It's not easy leaving everything behind, but they do it. And here we have Bnei Reuven, who are on the brink of moving into Eretz Yisrael with the rest of Klal Yisrael. And we're quite happy to stay over Eva Yarden. What happened to them? What happened to them? What happened to this passion, this desire to finally come into Eretz Yisrael, and they're happy for the bit of Gashmias to stay across Eva Hayarden? What's the idea? What got into these people? Now, so let's get perspective over here. We have to understand, number one, that these Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven were very, very special people. Okay? The Gemara brings down Omer of Yudin, it's brought down in the Yalkut to Yeshua. Sheved Reuven the God, Hoyu Bnei Pamalia Shul Yeshua. They were Yeshua's special forces. You know, you have La Havdal, used to have Saddam Hussein, used to have his own forces. I forgot what they were called. They were called the Royal Guard. The Royal Guard or something. And there's the crack forces of people who are the elitist forces who go along with him, and they were trusted more than anybody else. So if Yudin brings down the Reuven and God, Hoyu Bnei Pamalia Shul Yeshua, they were his Royal Guard. Now the Royal Guard in those days were not the most, you know, had the biggest muscles, and they were the best sharpshooters. They were the Tamil Chachamim, they were the Tzaddikim. And therefore it's clear that these people were on a very, very high level, that they're actually Yeshua chosen to be his royal guard. And Gemara brings down, the Medrash brings down, he escorted them back to the Yarden. And when they saw that, you know, that he's going back with hardly any people with him, they went back and they accompanied him back to his house. People that were sensitive, they were Tamil Chachomim, they were people who Yeshua could rely on. They weren't what you call Katlikanya, they weren't people who, you know, they were nothings, they were very, very great people. More than that, we discussed beforehand that Moshe Rabbeinu asked them just to go and fight for those 7 years, and they said, no, we're happy to go and fight for the 7 years, plus another 7 years to make sure Klal Yisrael are settled. So the Moshe Nefesh, for sake of Klal Yisrael, they were sensitive to their needs. It's brought down from the Mefarshim that it's clear that Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven were not asking to live Eva HaYardim for the sake of Parnasa. It is clear that the only reason why they asked that was because they wanted to have an easier Parnasa that they can sit and learn with more Menuchas and Nefesh. If a field is pasture, you don't have to start worrying about where your animals are going to be eating and how they're going to go out pasturing with different lands. You can just sit down at home with your Gemara, sit down in Kodal, and get your little children to go out and take the animals out to be fed, and that's it. That's what they wanted. So the Maisa, we're not talking about Chas V'Shalom Rishoyim, we're not Chas V'Shalom talking about people who are unsensitive, we're talking about people who are Maisa Nefesh to go and fight and to settle them, and they were the best forces of Yeshua. And they did it Hashem Shemayim. So was there anything wrong? So the Medrash Rabbah in Chof Beis Vov, Medrash Rabbah says, "V'chein atem moitzev bnei God bnei Reuven, shohoya ashirim. Bnei God bnei Reuven were very wealthy. For hoylehem mikne godol, and they had a huge amount of livestock. V'chovavu es memoinom, they loved their money. V'yoshvu lehem chutz la'aretz, and they decided to dwell in chutz la'aretz. Lefikoch golu tchila mekol ha'shvatim, because of that." They went into Golus earlier than all the other Shvatim. Shnema, there's different Pesukim over there in Melachim. Umi Gorom Lehem, what caused them to do this? Because the fact that they distance themselves from Mitoch HaChem is Shul Kinyonim because of their money. In other words, Rabbi Isai, it says very clearly from this Medrash that Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven were taken to task for the fact that they were not willing to go into Eretz Yisrael, and they were happier to stay in Chutz La'aretz with all their gashmis rather than go into Eretz Yisrael. Now let's understand this carefully. What is Chutz La'aretz by Eva HaYarden? What level of Chutz La'aretz is it? Is a Chiva Trumas and Maestros there? Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a Chiva Trumas and Maestros. There's a Chiva of Schmidt. Is a Chiv Trumas and Maestros. Yeah? They had tremendous Kedush over there. It's clear that they had that. What was lacking? I'll tell you a beautiful story over Rev Zev Lef said this story when he was in Miami Beach. He had there was a man in his kahila called Bernie. And Bernie was a sailor. He was a huge, huge fellow. He said his thighs, you know, his arms are bigger than less thighs. He's a huge guy. I've heard the story before about Bernie. He said the story very often. And this guy was a sailor. He had huge tattooed biceps. And he'd come into shul. He was a simple man. And one day, he comes into shul, and there's a big balagan going on. What's the problem? That previous year, there was a father of one of the mispallim in the shul, was niftar, and therefore he had yotzeit on Rosh Hashanah. Bernie always got an aliyah on Rosh Hashanah. He's one of the miyasim of the shul. He began the shul together with another few chevra, so he always got his aliyah on Rosh Hashanah. This year, the person who had yotzeit came to him and said to him, one of the men in the shul said to him, "If you don't mind, do you mind pushing off to Yom Kippur? Instead of let me get the aliyah on Rosh Hashanah, and you get the aliyah on Yom Kippur." So Bernie said, no problem, absolutely fine. He comes to shul, Reb Lev, one morning, and there's this huge sobbing hulk. So what is it, Bernie? What's going on? He said, "Rabbi, I've got to talk to you immediately." I said, "After davening." No, I've got to talk to you. "After davening, Bernie, I'm happy to speak to you after davening." Okay. After davening, Bernie comes, sits down in his office, and he's sobbing like a baby. So, "Bernie, what's the matter?" And he's uncontrollable. He can't get a word out of him. "So what's the problem? What happened? Somebody died?" "No." "Is somebody ill?" "No." What's the problem?" He said, "They asked me whether I'm willing to change my aliyah from Rosh Hashanah to Yom Kippur. And I said yes. I said it much too easily. Maybe I should have considered what an aliyah is. Maybe I should have considered what Rosh Hashanah is, what Yom Kippur is. How could I make a decision, such an important decision, so easily? How can I possibly say yes when I haven't thrown in all the variables? It's such a big decision. What day to get an aliyah? What day to make a bracha to Rabbeinu Shlom? I could do that so easily." And he was broken. This man was broken from the fact that he took something that should be taken seriously, took it lightly. And Rav Lev told him, "On the contrary, you're trying to help them, and it's a tremendous thing. Yom Kippur is also chashuv." And he calmed him down. But the gadlus, Rav Lev says, is that a person has to know what is important. A decision in ruchnius has to be taken at least as seriously as a decision in gashmius, a big decision in gashmius. B'nei God and B'nei Reuven were making a decision. The decision was, you know what, for the sake of ruchnius, I'm deciding to live in Eva HaYardin for the sake of Parnassah. But one second. Eva HaYardin doesn't have the same kedusha. You can't bring the Korban Oimah from Eva HaYardin. You can't bring Bekurim from Eva HaYardin. You can't bring Shteh Lecha from Eva HaYardin. You're making cheshbonis over here. You're deciding for the sake of you sitting in Koilol and learning to be done a little bit easier. You've decided that asking Moshe Rabbeinu's advice, I feel for my ruchnius, I'm making a decision. I'm living in Chutz Oretz. What right do you have to do that? What right do you have to make a decision in Parnassah, even if for the sake of ruchnius, without taking seriously every dimension of what you're doing? Do you know that you're living in a place that doesn't have exactly the same kedusha? Are you aware that Eva HaYardin has Trumas and Maish, doesn't have the Oimah? Do you realize, for the sake of your learning, it could be that you're not eating the same Dovah Shabbat kedusha? Ask! Go ask your Rebbeim. Go ask the Das Torah. To make a decision up like that was something as a fundamental flaw in B'nei God, B'nei Reuven. And because of that, that flaw went from generation to generation, and eventually they were not ro'i to live in Eretz Yisrael, and they went into Golos earlier than the rest of Klal Yisrael. Not sure how many years, probably between 20 to 25 years earlier than the rest of Klal Yisrael. Because that fundamental flaw, that lack of appreciation of what decision of ruchnis is all about, caused them to lose Eretz Yisrael later on. There's big decisions. There's very, very big decisions to make. Where does a person live for the sake of Parnassah? Reb Aaron says this. Reb Aaron says this in the Kuda. Reb Aaron says that a decision made for Ruchnius based on Gashmius is a very serious decision. To live in a place where Ruchnius isn't that great, the day schools aren't that great, the Chadorim aren't that great, to work in an environment where a person is compromising their values for the sake of looking after the children or putting bread on the table is all well and good as long as it doesn't come on the cheshbon of ruchnius. Who knows? Who knows, Rabbeinu Shalom wants you to that you should children should sit and learn, that your daughter should marry Bnei Torah, if it's coming at the expense of you hanging around women who aren't dressed the way they should be dressed. A wife going to support a husband in Kodal in a lawyer's office, who knows whether that's what Rabbeinu Shalom wants? Maybe the preachers and the Kalas Reish that's going through, that is in the air there, is going to go chas v'chalila down into the family. Is that what Rabbeinu Shalom wants? Who knows? Go and ask Das Torah. That was a flaw. So the first fundamental idea of this parasha is, in its length, in its detail, is to show that when it comes to a decision based on Ruchnius, one has to ask. One has to take it seriously. And it, since it didn't take it as seriously as it could, even though they were tzaddikim, and even though they're doing the Shem Shemayim, but who knows, there could be a little flaw there which should go down and make a major impact on the future generations. And that's exactly what happened. And not only that, not only did the Ruchnius fail, the Gashmius failed too. The Gemara says, Rabbi Yitzchak says, and also brought in Yitzchak Rabba, when the Bnei Gobner went to Eretz Yisrael, they saw the amount of harvest there is there. Kama nota yeshbo, omru toiv molei kaf nachas ba'oretz hazois mimolei chofnaim eva yadin. Even the gashmius is better in Eretz Yisrael. I prefer one measure here than two measures over there. Even the gashmius was wrong. And therefore, when you make a decision which is not based on the correct principles, not only does the Ruchnius fail, but the Gashmius fails too. That's lesson number one. Lesson number two is a beautiful Abarbanel. The Abarbanel says that in the times of the past, when a person mentioned HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, they saw that as something being very, very serious. They saw it something as being a Shevise Hashem Negde Tomid Halacha. You know, today, you go into a cab, and you hear the cab driver speaking on the phone, Bezrat Hashem Machar, you know, on Friday, Bezrat Hashem Machar, which is Shabbos, I'm going to the beach, and driving to the beach. Bezrat Hashem, what's Bezrat Hashem? I think Hashem wants you to drive to the beach on Shabbos. Bezrat Hashem, this, Bezrat Hashem, and if you say anything to them, oh, Bezrat Hashem, you know, fine, you know, there is an element there of having your brain shalim in your life, but is it mitzvahs noshim with a model? Is it something that's automatic? Is it a habit, or is it real? Says Abarbanel, from the time of the Tanakh, it was real. When a person mentioned Rabbeinu Shalom's name, it was real. It was the fact that they saw Rabbeinu Shalom in their lives and it took him seriously. If you look in the parasha, he says, with a discussion between Bnei God and Bnei Reuven, there's something very, very missing. He says, look in the discussion, the Pasuk says, Vayomru, in Pasuk Hey, Perik Lamed Beis Pasuk Hey, Vayomru im tzonachim beinecho yitzen es ha'oretz hazoyis la'abdecho gidus lante abdecho la'achuzo altavrenus ha'yardein, don't let us cross the Yardein. That's it, no Hashem's name mentioned there. Vayomru Moshe answering them back. And he said, Pasuk Zayin, V'lomo nesonu es, V'lomo sinun es lei b'nei Yisrael ashen nosen lehem Hashem. Hashem's name is mentioned. Kavla Pesukim later, Levilti voila oris ashenosin lahem Hashem. The next posuk, Vayecha af Hashem bayemahu. The posuk later, Ashenishbati lavrom liyisuk liyaki pilo mila acharai, Bulti kole benifune, etc., etc., ki milo acharai Hashem. Next posuk, Vayecha af Hashem bayisrael. Again and again Hashem's name is mentioned. Vene kamtin tachas avesechem al charoin af Hashem al Yisrael. And again and again and again, almost every posuk of Moshe Rabbeinu throws the name of Hashem. They said back to Moshe Rabbeinu, "V'yigshei lo v'yoyimru gidrei soy nivnim neknei poiv orim natapenu." We'll do this, and we'll and next pasuk again it says, "I will go along and we'll fight." It does not mention Hashem Kodesh Baruch Hu's name. Le'noshiv el betenu oydis nachal b'nei Yisrael ish nachloso. It doesn't mention Hakodesh Baruch Hu's name once in this discussion. Moshe went back to them in tasmus dava hazeh into cholzim from Hashem lemolchama. Moshe Rabbeinu answers back with Hashem, and again it says next pasuk. Again and again, Moshe Rabbeinu puts every posuk, it says Hashem. At the end, what's going on? Says Abarbanel, Bnei God and Bnei Reuven felt that using Rabbi Yishlein's name and not real with who they are, it's possibly like use Maskei Shem Hashem for nothing. And they didn't mention HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name because they didn't really feel like HaKadosh Baruch Hu was running their lives too much. Moshe Rabbeinu gives them Musa, and he gives them a whole Musa drasha, and every time, every pasuk, he says, where's Rabbi Yishlein in your life? There's Hashem. Hashem brings you here. Hashem takes you there. Hashem gave you the land. Hashem got angry. Hashem, Hashem, Hashem. Eventually the penny dropped and he said, yes, okay, we're going to go to the Mochom Lifnei Hashem. A weakness of chinuch. The fact that their Shvatim went into Golus 20 or 25 years earlier than Resa Klal Yisrael was because there was a minute lack of Lifnei Hashem in their lives. There were tzaddikim, the Tamidei Chachamim, there were the best soldiers for Yeshua, there were Mois Nefesh for Klal Yisrael, it was a Shem Shemaim, but there was something missing in the language, the way they spoke, the way, the atmosphere of what they were giving over, there was something lacking of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. And Moshe Rabbeinu picked up on that, and that's why he spoke again and again, Lifnei Hashem, 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 all the way through until they finally understood. The limit from this is as follows. There are certain times when a person does Averis. Yeah. And certain times a father misbehaves. A child understands a father misbehaves, and later on, when he goes through yeshivas, or becomes a balabas, or becomes a koilman, he understands his father's mistake. And he doesn't do the same mistakes as his father with chatoim. The father's not makbid in Hilchos Lashon Hara. Okay, so Charles starts on Hilchos Lashon Hara, he realizes his father's mistakes, and he works through the halachas properly, and he's careful the way he speaks. But with hashkofa, with the atmosphere that's in the house, where a child can't really pick up that's right or that's wrong, that's much more difficult for a child to throw away and to change later on. Let me give you an example. I'm not going through the halachas over here. I don't know. To throw a halacha to you, probably is awesome. But something that irritates me very, very much. You get people finishing Shmona Esrei, and you're waiting for the chazan. So as they finish the Oseh Shalom, their hand goes automatically into their pocket, onto the belt, and out comes the iPhone. Right? The BlackBerry. And they're looking at the browsing, whatever it is, their emails or the text messages or the missed calls, and they're browsing on the thing, and they're flipping through it. As soon as you see, I finish Oseh Shalom, bam, hand straight to the iPhone or the BlackBerry. Is that awesome? Maybe it is a little bit awesome. The shul is supposed to be not Masiach Das and Tefillah. Who knows? I'm not going to the halachas, but the hashkofa shavui, the hashkofa that Shmona Esrei is finished. Baruch Hashem, I've done that. Let's get back to business. Let's get back to something I enjoy. These people aren't working for Hatzalah. These people aren't world specialists that, you know, they've been called across the world to do a life-saving operation for a three-day-old child. It's posh, back to business. That is what's important. Person straight away after Nacht, immediately after Nacht, straight up into his office and does his emails. Sometimes it is Negea, sometimes it is relevant. But what does it mean? What does it mean to a child? Shabbos is important, yes. Do we keep Lamtes Melachas? Yes. But you know what? When Shabbos is over, Baruch Hashem, I can get back to business again. How much is Hashem in your life? Some people get dressed into the weekday clothes as soon as Shabbos is over. You're not allowed to. Halacha says you're not allowed to do that until Chatzos. But there's a hashkofa. A child may not even realize that. But deep down, there's a message that's going through. That is Rabbeinu Shleilom, and there's what my needs are important. And those minute little nuances of conversation, of behavior, go through to the children, and that was a flaw in Bnei Gad Bnei Reuven. On a similar note, the end of the parasha, if you look in the Vayolchu Bnei Moch, it talks about different cities that they captured, okay, and how they changed the names of the cities they captured. Talks about even in Bnei Gad Bnei Estivoy, Vesatoris, Vesaroye, Vesatoris, Shoifa, Vesyaza, Vyogvo. The pasuk says later on, "Ve'es navoi, ve'es bal ma'oin, perik lamad beis, pasuk lot lamad ches, musa bois shom, musa bois shame." What does musa bois shame mean? Anyone learn Rashi? Musa bois shame says Rashi, "Navoi bal ma'oin shmois avodas kechov mehin." The name of avodas zara. For hoya amirim korin arayhem ashem avodas zara shalehem. And the amirim used to call the cities after the avodas zara. Ubnei Reuven he savor shemom shemen sachem. They changed the name to a different name. Vezel musavoy shem. That's one pshat of Rashi. We'll see different pshat soon. Okay. Vayikru b'shem es shemoyis ha'orim hashebona, and they called the cities the names that they called them. Later on, in the carries on, and it says Vayoir ben Menashe holach v'yilkud es chavoy sehem. They call the city Chavoy Sehem. Vayikra esem, and they call the cities Chavoy Yair, the ranch of Yair. They call the cities the ranch of Yair. V'noivach, says the last pasuk in the parasha, holach he went. V'yilkud es kenos ves b'noiseho. He captured kenos ves b'noiseho and the little daughter villages from there. Vayikra lo, yeah, with a double thing there. Noivach b'shmoy. You call it Noivach b'shmoy. Now, Vayikra lo is a very unusual word. Because first of all, the way you read it, Vayikra lo is an extra nukuda there. But lo is a lo rofo. It's a hey rofo. Now it's not lo with a mappic hey, it's a lo. Vayikra lo. Yeah? So from there we learn Vayikra lo. Says Rashi, lo ain't a mappic hey, it doesn't have a heavy lo, it, in a feminine context. And he sees Darshan. Ramban asked Rashi why he's already brought down in the Medrash Rabbah in Rus. Lefi shlo niskayim lo shem ze. This name never lasted very long. Lefi kochu rofa. The name that Noivach called his city never lasted very long. Shemashma midrashoi kumoi loy. And if it's mashma v'yikra loy, it's not a law with an aleph it. But Vayikra lo, it wasn't called very long Noivach in his name. So instead of Vayikra lo, it was called Noivach in his name. Vayikra lo, it wasn't really called very much Noivach, and it actually lost its name sometime later on. Okay? That's what Rashi brings over here, and Adam Rafosh bring that down already from the Medrash. Why? What's the difference? Why was it Vayikra esem Chavis Yoy, when Chavis Yoy called the city Chavis Yoy? Generations and generations later, it's brought down in Yeshua that was the name of the city was called Chavis Yoy. That lasted generations. But when it came to Noivach Bishmoy, said the Pasuk, you know what? It didn't last very long. And every time you go to the Kriyas HaTorah, yeah, if the Valkyrie is in law, he's going to be corrected. It's law. Yeah? Why is it? What's the meaning behind this Pshat? So there's a very, very beautiful piece from Shimon Schwab. He says, everyone is entitled. In my own basis, everyone is entitled to label their items. If a person has a city, he's entitled to define the parameters of his city because it's his property. A person has a right to label his items. And that's what Chavis Yoy did. That's what they did. Yoy ben Menashe did that, and he called it Chavis Yoy, the Chava, the ranch, as it were, the farm of Yair. He's entitled to do that because by doing so, it's clearly it's his and not somebody else's. Noivach, though, did not call it the city of Noivach. He called it Noivach after his name. Vayikra lo Noivach b'shmoy. He called the city itself Noivach, not the farm of Noivach or the city of Noivach. He called the city Noivach. What's the difference? What's the difference between calling something a city of Reuven or calling the city Reuven? Says Mayim Beis Sheva, says Shimon Schwab, there's a major difference. The difference is, are you defining yourself by your money, or are you separate from your money? Do your possessions dictate who you are, or you're a person who has an outside life that owns possessions? When it comes to Chavis Yoir, he had a name. He's Yoir, and therefore he's calling the cities that are around him, those that he captured, the Chavis Yoir, the cities that belong to Yoir. That's fine. That's nothing wrong with that. You know what? And I can say for generations, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing anti-Yiddishkeit based with that. Bechlal. When it came to Noivach, he called the city Noivach. In other words, me and my money are exactly the same person. Not the fields of Noivach, not the farm of Noivach, not the city of Noivach. The city, I am Noivach. And I am Noivach. The city is mine and I am the city. I am that. You know, like you get the football supporters, I am Manchester United. That is who they are. The whole Mahus don't have their own identity. That is who they are. If they win or they lose, well, they've won or they've lost. They have no personal identity, Bechlal. That's wrong. To have a situation where a person bases his whole being, to have a society based on who you are is how, what car you drive, what house you live in, how much money you have in the bank. That doesn't have a cue. There's an Ayin Torah, but Sorotskin brings in, Vayikro, you have it normally a klal, Vakosav lo, Sefer Krisos, right? You're going to write a get lishmo. Yeah, so lo is connected to the word lishmo. You know, Vakosav lo, so it's lo, it always means you've got to write it for her, the get. Lo means lishmo. He said over here, the law doesn't have a mapik. It was not law lishmo. It was a little bit lacking in the lishmo. So we still have his name called out every single year in Kriyas HaTorah. Read it out in every shul. Why? Because to tell us the Maisa, he did the gewaldige thing, the fantastic thing of capturing lands in Eretz Yisrael for Yeshiva Eretz Yisrael. But there was a law. There was nekuda lacking in the lishmo, and therefore that never lasted for generations. When a person associates himself with his money, when he is his money, then it doesn't have a cue. And that didn't stay on forever. Rishon Shmuel Hirsch says something slightly different from Targum Yonason. And Targum Yonason says, when on the Apostle Musabu Hashem, he says Musabu Hashem actually says he changed the name. He says Musabu Hashem. He brings as follows: V'yaskarta demikvan shorta golif shmo gavraya. In other words, what they did was they actually etched their names into the cities. All the big strong guys who captured the cities etched their names into the walls of the cities. Now you go to in England, you got the old town halls. Yeah, and you go outside and you have engravings. In Woodford they had it. Remember where Jamie got married. There's an old town hall there, right? And in there you go into the main hall there and have all the pictures, but you have more, you have all the mayors from the 1710, 1720, all etched into the wall. So that's what these people did. They etched their names into the wall. You know, on a more primitive basis, people etch their names onto trees, onto the graffiti, you know, just... It's a certain feeling of, you know, I may not last very long because, you know, who knows what's going to happen to me, but at least my name should be sprawled all over town. Okay? That is, says Rav Shimon Schwab, says Rav Shimon Shafal Hirsch, a Goyish Hashkofer. We don't define our existence and we don't continue forever and ever by putting our names down on useless things. You know, having the penguin compound in London Zoo named after you is not going to give you an eternal name. It's not going to happen. One day, it is eventually going to get destroyed. What is going to give it to you is Eile Toldus Noyach, that told us that what one does in life, what the children we bring up, the education we give to our generations that come from us, that is what's important. And therefore, another limit from over here as well is idea of focus. B'nei Godu B'nei Re'uven, money is not everything. Don't define yourself by money. Define yourself by who you are. Define yourself by what you've done in your life, how you've helped people, where you're holding with Ruchnius. That's another important lesson. But I just want to finish off with one final vote. Klal Yisrael are going across over here, they're going across the Yarden, and again, B'nei God, B'nei Re'uven, the Apostle says over here, Vayigsha Elo Vayomru. Again, the beginning of the parasha, it says, Gidroi soin, perit lamad base posit tezain. The Igshaila that came to Moshe Vayomer and said to him, Gidroi soin nivden le miknenu. Gidroi soin, which means pens for sheep we'll build for our cattle. Va'orim le tapenu, and cities for our children. Moshe Rabbeinu said later on, in posit choftalud, benu lechem orim le tapchem, build cities for your children. Ukderes tzeinachem, and pens for your sheep. V'hayotzi mipichem tasu, and what comes out of your mouth, make sure you keep. So Rashi points out already that it's switched around. That beforehand, talked about first building pens for the sheep, and then talking about building cities for the children. Later on, Moshe Rabbeinu says, that's not what we do. We don't build ourselves places for our parnasa, we start worrying about our family comes first. And then Moshe Rabbeinu says to them, V'yotzi mipichem tasu. V'yotzi mipichem tasu means what comes out of your mouth, be careful you keep. What's the idea behind that? What's the connection between the two? Rabbi Yisai, we look at B'nai God, B'nai Re'uven, and we look at them a bit primitive. How can you possibly build pens for your sheep before you build homes for your wife and children? Where are you? Where's your head? Where's your head? What's going on? And Lemaisa, we all fall into the same mistake. How many times, or in the middle of eating supper with the wife and children, and the phone rings, and that's it, end of it. You know, there's a business call coming in. How many times do we go away on unnecessary business trips when we can stay home and educate our children to be close with our children? How many times do we stay in the office late and miss putting our children to bed? Where are our priorities? Is the priority making money? Obviously for our children. You know, Rabbi Twersky once said, you know, everyone makes money for their children. He's waiting to see that special child that generation upon generation have made money for that child. No, they're making money for their children. Eventually they're making money for their children. They're making money for their children. Where's this special child that everyone's always been making money for? That's what it is. It's priorities. It's who we are. Are we fathers or are we business people? And we all fall into the same mistake. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, you should just know that if you are not careful about getting your priorities right, if you're not careful about putting your children first, then who knows, says Ksav Sofer, how far you can be twisted to make money. If the most precious thing in the world, our children, our future, the education we give our children, is compromised by a business decision of staying late at work, or not even coming back at work, or going along across the sea every single week, leaving our children behind, who knows, if that's the case, how completely distorted our minds are going to be when it comes to being honest with other people's money. If we're willing to sacrifice our children for money, we're certainly willing to sacrifice our values for money and other people's money for our money. That's certainly the case. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu said, if you don't see, if you don't appreciate, if you don't realize that children come first before money, then hayoytzim epichem tas, I beg of you, make sure you keep your word. Because if you don't have priorities straight, if you don't see that money is secondary, and you and your children and your future is primary, then you're going to, by dint of fact, you're going to get warped. There's going to be fraud, there's going to be lies, there's going to be deceit, it's going to be sheker. And that is why, with you, Bnei Gob, Bnei Reuven, I don't see Hashem in every single level of your life. I don't see you have priorities. I don't see it straight. I don't see that Parnosa is secondary. I don't see your children are your most important things. And therefore I don't trust what you're saying, and therefore I've got to write for you a really detailed contract. And that's where I go through his contract more and more. Even though they're great, and they went to Yeshua, and the Moisa Nefesh, and the Bnei Torah, and they will do it for Ruchnius, but there's certain elements that are missing in our life. If we don't have priorities straight, if we don't realize how important children are, how important Hashem is in our life, how important Ruchni is, and have to ask the questions correctly, then the Maisa, Hayyotzim Epichem Tasu, when threatened, then what we say, that our priorities, that who we are, is going to ultimately be compromised. That's Ksav Sofer. And the Zman Torah just adds, he says, we say in Ne'ilah, U'moysa odim el v'hema oin ka'kol hovel. We're all the same as animals, right? But the next pasuk says, in the next tefillah it says, Ata hivdalta enosh meroish, but you have made human beings different. V'chil lamu lefanecho l'man nechta ma'isha kidenu, and you've separated, human beings are different, in order that we should be able to separate ourselves from our isha kidenu, from our deceit done through our hands, can come back to you. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, human beings are different to animals in one matter, and that is how we use our mouth. Humans are able to communicate in a sophisticated way through their mouths. Behemoths aren't. He said, if you're putting behemoths before people, means you don't appreciate the koyach hadibur. If you don't appreciate koyach hadibur, then I have to be very careful every word you say. Hayotzim pichem tasa. Make sure you keep what you say. People who love animals have a right to love animals. They're very loyal. They don't answer back. But if a person puts an animal before a person, then basically you're saying we are exactly the same as the animals, and by doing so, we have no right over animals, and therefore our koyach hadibur isn't that special. Isn't so important. Therefore we can say whatever we want. So this parasha is a long parasha to hammer home the final messages of Moshe Rabbeinu before he comes to Eretz Yisrael. The importance of making the right decisions of Ruchnius. The importance of having Ribbono Shel Olam, being excited about the important things in life. Making the decisions based on Gashmius that come secondary only after Ruchnius. Putting your family first. Making sure that we know what we're saying is emes. And that is a parasha, and that is why it's brought out in so much length. And Be'ez Hashem, we should learn from this, to have the clear clarity and not learn from their mistakes. And Be'ez Hashem will have the koyach to maximize, not like they did, went into the Golas first, but have the Ruchnius and the Gashmius, Be'ez Hashem. Mm-hmm.